Amateur Traveler, episode 103. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Baja, California.
I got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh, no.
15-hour flight, oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I have three news stories for you today. The first one is bad news for Caribbean tourism, but possibly good news for you if you're looking for bargains. There has been a slump this year in U.S. travel to the Caribbean. Tourism marketers blame much of the slump on Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, which since January has required passports for U.S. citizens returning by air from the Caribbean, Mexico, Canada, and Bermuda. Americans represent over half of all visitors across the Caribbean, though to some destinations, such as the Bahamas, they account for more than 75% of overnight stays. The new rules, which led to lengthy processing delays, quote, effectively shrunk our U.S. market to a third of its usual size, unquote, Jamaican Tourism Chief Basil Smith noted in a Tourism Department blog recently. The second news story has to do with traveler frustrations. According to a survey that was commissioned by the travel insurance provider Access America, the top 10 things that travelers are frustrated with, this is U.S. travelers, number one, the cost of gas, number two, airline airport service, delays of luggage, long lines, food or lack thereof, cramped planes, missed connections, etc. Number three, the cost of airline, cruise line, or train tickets. Number four, the cost of lodging and or other attractions. Number five, homeland security safety issues. Number six, illness or injury that affects you or your family members causing cancellation or interruption of a trip. Number seven, labor actions, strikes or slowdowns, etc. Number eight is the weather. Number nine is service by other traveler suppliers, hotels, cruise line, etc. Number 10 is difficulty booking a trip. Do it yourself or using a travel agent. I'd be curious what frustrates you. You might go to the discussion boards at amateurtraveler.com/board and let us know. And the third news story bore the headline, Pope launches his own airline, which was the headline in London Sunday Times. It's not 100% accurate, but the Vatican is approving a charter service that will begin flying Catholic pilgrims to holy sites around the globe, which is called Mistral Air. Links to all of those articles in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Mark. Mark was on here before talking about Antarctica, but he's come back to talk to us about a trip to Baja. This is the third time we're trying this recording, so Mark, I hope we all have fewer technical difficulties. Thank you for your patience, and welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Weren't you just on a minute ago?
I think attempting to record this show has taken just about as long as the actual vacation to Baja.
Tell us a little bit about Baja, where it is, and why you went there.
Well, I went there last January for Christmas break. And Baja, California, of course, is just south of California, USA. I suppose not everybody knows that its proper name is actually Baja, California. And it's divided into two provinces, I think they're called, Baja California Norte and Baja California Sur. It was my Christmas vacation. I wanted to get out of the snow and get into the warm sun.
And instead of cruising down to Cabo San Lucas or flying down there, you are actually driving the whole way.
We cruised down in a different style, yeah. I went down with my girlfriend. We cruised in a 1995 Saturn. Drove the entire length of the peninsula, but the entire trip was around 3,000 miles coming from the Bay Area.
Oh, wow.
But, about 1,000 miles down the peninsula one way. And not very safe roads, by the way. The guidebooks recommend that you don't necessarily drive down there, you know, for good reason. Roads are long, they're narrow, and they're in very bad shapes.
Now, I've driven the very northernmost part of that, the first 50 miles or so. How close was I to the end of the good road?
Pretty much Ensenada.
Okay.
You come across the border, you're in Tijuana, and then once you get down to Ensenada, Ensenada is like the dropping off point of civilization, I guess. And even when you cross the border, you know, you're allowed free trips or so to get down to Ensenada, but once you get past south of there, you're supposed to have a visa. You get into more of the real Mexico once you get down past there.
And Ensenada is only about 100 miles down, I want to say.
Yeah, give or take. I think it may be 70 or something.
Okay, so most of the road down to the tip of Baja is bad road.
Yeah, most of the road is barely wider. It's a two-lane road. Highway 1 is the main highway all the way down.
Right.
And it's paved. You know, that's a good thing because not all highways in Baja are paved. But it's a two-lane road, and each lane is quite literally 18 inches wider than a standard car.
Oh, my.
And there are no shoulders. The shoulders all instantly drop off down an embankment for the entire 1,000 miles. I mean, you just have no room off the shoulders. And we actually had an interesting story on the way back where we accidentally ran off the road and smashed my girlfriend's car. Fortunately, she was driving at the time, so that was okay.
So you didn't get blamed, is what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Well, the good part of that is I'd actually done pretty much all of the driving all the way down and then all the way back, and we were halfway home, and my girlfriend kind of casually mentioned, she says, well, I haven't had a chance to drive yet. I said, okay, well, I'm going to go to sleep. You got to drive for a little while. And I woke up to find the car about halfway through a 540-degree spin.
Oh, wow.
Heading for a set of boulders on the side of the road. We got very, very lucky. We missed the boulders. We hit a signpost, came to a stop, and miraculously, the only damage to the car was a flat tire on the right-hand side of the road, on the right-hand side of the car, and we have a hole in the right front quarter panel where it struck a road marker. But otherwise, we were not hurt, a little shaken, but we had people who were right behind us help pull us off the road, and we were on the way within 15 minutes after spinning out of control on the road.
You mentioned something when we were talking about it before, that in addition to not driving, they also recommend that if you do drive, not to drive at night.
Yeah, there's good reason for that. Now, we tempted fates most of the way down and back because we discovered it was a lot faster to drive at night. The roads are long and winding, and they go up and down hills the entire way, so you can't see very far around the corner. And during the daytime, I mean, you have a lot of people who are driving 40, 45 miles an hour. You find a real variety of vehicles on the road there, you know, from old farm trucks that are loaded down with produce and they can barely do 30 miles an hour to big semis, and then, you know, you get motorcycles and cars and RVs, and people are going to different speeds. So we found that we can actually see better at night to handle in the mountain. We're very fortunate for the entire trip, and again, coming home, we kind of discovered why they recommend that you don't drive at night down there. We came across a minivan who had hit a wild pack of mules.
Oh, wow.
It had totally wiped out their minivan, although, again, as luck would have it, nobody was hurt on their side. We came across a very, very desolate place way down south, and so we stopped, and we helped them, drove them back 20 miles to the nearest town. And of course, this was at 1:30 in the morning, so we had to wake the policeman up. The one policeman that covers like the 300 miles stretch of road there. It took us probably 2-3 hours to take care of these folks who had hit the pack of mules. And when we started heading back along our way, not only did we come across the one pack of mules that these guys had hit, but we'd seen three other groups of mules, probably anywhere from 8 to 20 in, I don't know if a pack is the right word, but 8 to 20 of them hanging out in three or four different places. And again, knock on wood, we were very, very lucky that had we not come across this other guy who had hit mules, we probably would have hit him within 15 to 20 minutes after we came across them.
Wow. What was the biggest surprise in the trip?
I'd have to say the biggest surprise was how expensive it was.
Really?
Yeah. I was expecting cheap Mexican vacation, actually. You know, it was similar to what I've experienced on the mainland a few times. But in truth, the prices were about the same as being in California. Gas was the same, maybe a little bit more expensive. Food along the way was slightly cheaper, but not significantly. Housing was the same. I mean, we did a combination of spending some nights in hotels, spending some night camping, doing touristy things. It was interesting that even in the middle of the country, where tourists just don't go, we discovered the prices for food and things like that were just about what we'd pay in California.
Huh. Any positive surprises?
Well, most positive surprise for me was we went to go visit our friends down in Todos Santos, which is almost all the way down at the tip of the peninsula, just north of Cabo San Lucas. And the two pleasant things there, very pleasant things, were we found a beach where turtles come to lay their eggs. We're right at the tail end of the season for that. And my friends, actually probably the most pleasant thing down there was my friends are musicians, and they've tapped into a pretty amazing musical community down in Todos Santos. The entertainment down there was just outstanding. We ran across a guy who is known as the George Benson of Mexico. And if you closed your eyes, this guy's guitar sound and his style really was exactly like George Benson. And this guy was a trip. He was a mystical guy. And he's the kind of guy who would take his guitar out onto the beach. And we were in an area where whales run. They migrate every year. And this guy is the kind of guy who would go and play his guitar out on the beach and actually lured whales into the area where he was playing. And he had video of this stuff, too. So, I mean, you know, we could see that this guy, he was out there, but he was the real deal.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what resources did you use in preparation for this trip?
Well, I like to travel mostly by the seat of my pants.
Okay.
But living into Mexico, I did a little bit of research online. I don't have any particular websites that I would recommend where I found information. I spent a little bit of time in bookstores at Barnes & Noble's just like, you know, reading through the guidebooks without actually buying them, just to sort of get a feel for traffic regulations, what to expect, what to do at the military checkpoints. Of course, I talked to my friends and asked them about how honest the cops would be down there, and if not, what was an appropriate bribe, and things like that.
And their answer was...
$20.
I guess that answers the first question.
Yeah, $20. The strategy is never carry too much money on you in one pocket, so that if $20 is not enough, they said the cops will sometimes just kind of ask you, you know, for what you have. And if you have $100, they'll take $100. If you have $20, they'll take $20. If you have $10, they'll, you know, take that and look at you real mean.
And did you need to take advantage of knowing what the correct bribe amount was on your trip?
No, actually, we didn't. I mean, we did have to go through, I think, like 7 or 8 military checkpoints coming from the south driving north. And that's really Mexico's passing nod to the NAFTA of promising to try to stop the drug trade coming into the United States. So every couple hundred miles or so, you go through a military checkpoint, and they make you get out and search your car, you know, look for drugs, weapons, whatever. And I was a little worried, actually, that we may have had to bribe along one particular route because the guys were giving the car a good going over, and I'd had a spear gun with me for scuba diving. And I didn't realize, because I do fly by the seat of my pants, I didn't realize that you're not exactly supposed to have spear guns in Mexico, because the diving there's mostly protected waters. They don't allow you to take a spear gun when you're on air. If you're snorkeling, you can have a gun, but if you're scuba diving, you're supposed to have just like a Hawaiian sling. So the cops were looking at me askance as they were going through, and they saw a spear gun down there. But I just pretended I didn't understand Spanish, which is not that far from the truth, and couldn't make out what they were saying. And I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. It was cold. They were tired, so they just kind of like let us go.
Now, you talked about crossing the border. Did you do the stop just before the border to get car insurance?
Yeah, I did buy car insurance before we went down. That's recommended. It was kind of it was interesting with the paperwork, though, because we drove through by accident. We wanted to hit the border early in the morning, so we had gone down the night before and stayed in Los Angeles, where my brother lives, and tried crossing the border on a Saturday morning at like 5:30 in the morning, and were so successful at it that we didn't actually stop in to get our visas or our tourists. You're supposed to have a little tourist visa there if you're going south of Ensenada. So we were expecting lines, and the research I had looked at said, stop at the tourist office just on the other side of the border, and you can get your travel permit. There was no traffic there, so we just blew on through the border and spent the entire trip without proper papers. I don't know if I should say this on the internet or not, but coming back, you're allowed to go to Ensenada without having any paperwork. So even though we spent 2 weeks down there, when we came back and the border guards were asking us, you know, where we went and all that, even though we had many tourist items that said Todo Santos and Place of South, we just said, well, we went to Ensenada and we've only been down there for 3 days, and they looked inside and waved us on.
Now, you're not recommending this approach.
Well, I would, but I take no responsibility for any actions that happens to somebody else if they try it.
What else along the way? So you've got Todos Santos, All Saints, I believe, is what that means.
Yep.
At the southern tip. What else along the way made the trip worthwhile? Or do you, in fact, find it was worthwhile to drive all that whole way down?
Oh, no, the trip was definitely worthwhile. We still debate whether we would do it again. I wanted to do it on a motorcycle, which would be kind of brutal. If anybody's listening to this and is thinking about it, go very well prepared. The roads are truly in very bad shape in some places, and you get surprised in the middle of corners on a motorcycle is not a lot of fun. One of the best things, a truly magical moment happened to us on the way down. We were going over Christmas, so I think we left 2 days before Christmas. Again, I had taken a look to see what cool things might be along the way, and we found a place in San Ignacio Springs, which is kind of like a little lagoon off of the Pacific Ocean here. It's, not too far, maybe 50 miles or so from the ocean. I'd read this thing about this people that had a yurt down there that, you know, it was just set up as a hotel room. So we thought that would be pretty cool. We managed to play around in Ensenada and all that stuff. So we came in late on Christmas Eve to this yurt that's on this lagoon. Incredibly beautiful night. I mean, it's 75 degrees and, you know, clear sky, and you can see forever down there. And, of course, we hadn't bothered to make reservations. So we got there and discovered about 30 people having a Christmas dinner, and it was the expatriate community down there. So they're pretty much all Americans who were living in San Ignacio and their hotel guests. And even though we didn't have a registration, the owner of the place just set two plates out for us and made us feel totally welcome. We ran across some really interesting people over dinner, and then, as it turns out, one of the people who were there owned a bed and breakfast in town. So we went to go stay in a bed and breakfast in San Ignacio, and this place was one of the founding homes in San Ignacio. So it was about a 150-year-old inn that was just beautifully decorated and set in a gorgeous courtyard right in the middle of town. And it's the kind of place that all the people who were at dinner were probably the only Anglos in town. Small town of maybe 1,000. San Ignacio was a real treat. And then we did a little bit of scuba diving in Mulegé, which is over on the other coast. It's over on the Sea of Cortez. We started down there to do some snorkeling and found kind of a locals place to go scuba diving. It's nothing that I would recommend to say, hey, you have to go dive in Mulegé in Baja. But since we were there, and I like to go check out strange places, we found some really nice holes, some dive holes that had a lot of lobster, and we had a lot of pelicans. Actually, we found, again, I don't know what they're called, a colony or whatever of pelicans. We could just watch those guys dive for hours, watch them fish. Mulegé was a good time. Good if you like the sea. We camped out on the beach there. It's completely legal to camp on any beach in Baja.
Huh.
The beaches are considered public access. Although you will find, we did find in Mulegé too, that some of the locals, even if they don't own the local beach, will charge you money to stay there if they can get it from you. in Mulihay, we found this really out-of-the-way place, and we're woken up at, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the morning by this 80-year-old woman or so who was just kept telling us that she wanted 30 pesos for the right to sleep where we were. We eventually gave it to her because she really looked like she needed the 30 pesos more than we did. But
that's about $4.
Yeah. So then from Mulihay, we got to Todos Santos. Town of Loreto is one of the tourist traps along the way. It's where the ferry comes in from the mainland. Loreto has a little bit of a feel kind of like Santa Barbara.
Okay.
To it. And then we stopped down at Cabo San Lucas just for the simple sake of saying, hey, we wanted to go all the way down to the tip. Cabo San Lucas has no soul compared to the rest of the country. I mean, the rest of the peninsula is really small towns. Usually most of them have no more than 1,000 people or so, and they're all probably 50 to 75 miles apart and with absolutely nothing in between.
What moment was the ultimate Baja experience for you? What sums it up?
Probably running off the road.
The Baja Chamber of Commerce won't be hiring you anytime soon.
The thing about Baja is about the drive down there is I nicknamed it the Road of Death. There are a countless number of memorials along the side of the roads. I mean, I really do have to say, the roads are quite dangerous.
El Camino del Muerte, I think?
Yeah, that's what I tried to name it in my bad Spanish. And personally, I think really what happened is...
I'm going
to
get letters here, but...
Personally, I think that whoever built the road probably just skimped on building the shoulders, you know, and took the money and kept it themselves. Because when you have a semi coming in the other direction, it gives you a thrill unlike any roller coaster ride you're going to experience. Because there is just no room to go, and it's a sharp drop-off from the shoulders. So we dodged things several times. I mean, there were cows, you know, a lot of dead cows along the side of the road. I have some photos somewhere. I kept trying to get pictures of vultures because there were, like, all kinds of vultures along the road. And then there are these memorials. We easily saw more than 100 of them driving from north down to south. These just little memorials along the side of the road that's certainly got my imagination stirring because it's desert the entire length of the Baja. Maybe anywhere from 50 to 100 miles between towns. And out in the absolute middle of nowhere, you know, you'd find these memorials where somebody either ran off the road or got struck by a car or something like that. So that's one of the things that strikes you as you go down the freeway there is how many memorials and wreaths there are alongside the road.
Hmm. Couple questions for you. Fill in these sentences. If you go to Baja, you've got to see what?
If you go to Baja, you've got to see the whales migrating.
Okay. Now, you were there during calving season?
Yes. We actually didn't see too many whales. We caught one group that was the advance guard, so to speak. Folks were commenting that the whales were about 2 or 3 weeks late when we were there, so we did see one group.
And these would be California gray whales?
Correct.
Okay. If you go to Baja, be sure to eat what?
Salsa. Salsa. Okay. The salsa down there is fantastic. And just the food, period. The food is just great. It does not compare to any Mexican food that I've had in the U.S. I didn't care whether it was just a seedy little cafe or a taqueria where you could get 4 tacos for a quarter. The food down there, just fresh ingredients, really, really zesty salsas. Really, really tasty down there. Had a good time eating down there.
Okay. I hesitate to ask. If you go to Baja, be sure to drink what?
Well, Don Julio tequila. We spent a good portion of our trip trying to find the perfect margarita. I was surprised that we really didn't find very many good margaritas. I mean, a margarita down there in many of the places where we were traveling consisted of freshly squeezed lime juice, like somebody picked it off the tree in the backyard, and whatever the local tequila was. It wasn't always really good tequila, and they seemed to forget the triple sec or anything else that ordinarily goes into a margarita. So we made our own concoctions, actually. Probably the best margarita we had down there was a papaya margarita, just by getting some fresh papayas and making our own in Todos Santos.
Okay. last fill in the blank. I really wish I hadn't.
Let Sarah drive.
Let Sarah drive.
She's going to kick me in the shin when she hears that.
What do you wish you'd known before you'd gone?
I wish I had known that the roads other than the main roads were going to be as bad as they were. So if you weren't on Highway 1, you were on a dirt road that was drivable but not maintained. So there were a lot of places that we wanted to go to off the beaten path, and we just couldn't do it because we were in Sarah's Saturn, and the car just wouldn't take that kind of beating. So if I go down there again, it would either be on a motorcycle capable of going off-road, or it would be in a four-wheel drive truck.
You mentioned trying to get pictures of vultures. Best picture that you took?
Well, I'm kind of morbid, I think, but I have a really nice picture of a close-up of a dead cow. Just because, you know, you don't see that flying by the side of the road in the United States all that often.
And again, I wouldn't be waiting for the call from the Baja Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. Otherwise, in the northern part of the peninsula, there's amazing cactus fields. And I don't know if forest is the right word for large collection of cacti. Within a 100 square meter area, you might have probably 15 or 20 different variety of cactus. And they are similar but different than the type of cactus that you'll see in the American Southwest. They had what became my favorite. I call them a Dr. Seuss cactus because every time I looked at them, it just reminded me of something that you had seen in a Dr. Seuss book. And then when I came home and started to do some research on them, it was in fact the Bujum cactus, which is something that Dr. Seuss has drawn in his books. So those were plentiful down there and in full bloom while we were there. Many of the cactus were in bloom while we were there. That was a treat to see. And then my second favorite picture is one actually that Sarah took, and it's of me trying to surf. It's a series of pictures. In one picture you see me smiling for the camera in the water up to my waist, and you know, you can see these 8 foot tall waves in the background behind me. And then in the next picture you can see me paddling right at the trough of one of these waves. And then the next picture is just white foam of me being completely buried and swamped in this wave. I was able to paddle through the break, but was not able to surf, and spent, probably 2 or 3 hours just really trying to beat against the waves, trying to get out to the spot where I could surf. Not my natural sport, I'm afraid.
Any final recommendations for somebody who's going to do a trip like this?
Todos Santos is beautiful. Todos Santos is like Santa Fe, New Mexico, except it's on the beach, where it's along the water. It's kind of a hippie town. It's an artsy, craftsy kind of town, so the local crafts you see there are of very, very high quality. It's the home to the Hotel California, which urban myth will have it is the Hotel California of Eagles fame. In fact, it's not, but that doesn't stop them from perpetrating that myth. So Todos Santos is a really beautiful place, and highly recommend that to anybody. And then otherwise, just the little towns along the way. You know, the missions, if anybody's into architecture, the Spanish missions down there are truly glorious, really beautiful. And then big shout out to Sam's American Bar in Mulegé, that after several weeks of eating nothing but Mexican food, when we were on our way back, we found this nice little bar that just served a regular old hamburger that was nice to come back to that kind of flavor after weeks of eating Mexican food. Again, I love the food down there. The food was fantastic. But after a while, you get tired of eating the same thing.
Okay. Well, Mark, I thank you for coming on the show again and telling us a little bit about your trip.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And I would recommend anybody to, with a sense of adventure, there's a lot more to see, but we just scratched the surface, so to speak, by driving down the road and camping along the ways. We didn't get a chance to go inland to get to some of the older towns or to get to some of the towns along the coast, which you'd have to have a four-wheel drive vehicle for. It's not for the faint of heart unless you're going to just fly down to Cabo San Lucas and do the party scene there. But if you want to see real Mexico, real small town Mexico, drive the interior sometime, and the people are very friendly, very helpful, and again, because we were going to places where most tourists don't go, they were certainly really glad to see us there and, you know, help spread a little money throughout the peninsula.
Well, thanks for coming.
Hey, thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, I had more technical difficulties for this interview than I think every other interview combined. So I'll post something on the discussion boards in case you're interested in that sort of level of detail of how this show is put together. Normally in this portion of the show, I give you internet resources. I was a little uninspired today, so I'm going to give you something else instead, which I haven't done before, which is a book resource, which is by the National Geographic, and it's called The 10 Best of Everything. And basically, it's going to give you different ideas for where you might be interested in traveling. 10 best beaches, 10 best islands, those sorts of things. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I had mentioned a while back about the possibility of doing an amateur traveler outing, an amateur traveler trip, and had mentioned the Galapagos Islands because my wife and I were thinking about that for next summer. I'm not sure that trip is on, but I am going to start a thread in the discussion board. Would people be interested in doing some trip together? And what would that be? So check that out at amateurtraveler.com/board. And I bring this up because I did get an email from Amy, who was interested in the trip that I had mentioned to the Galapagos a while ago. Well, this show is later getting out than I usually like, so I'm going to bring this show to a close. If you have any comments for me, feel free to write me at host@amateurtraveler.com or call the comment line. The number for the comment line is 408-8494-POD. That's 408-849-4763. And that's basically going to leave me a Skype voicemail. If you have Skype, you can also just connect directly to Chris Twice and avoid any long-distance charges you might have for calling that number. Love to hear from you, and as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not, maybe not today.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.